Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. I want to thank our other participating sponsors like AMS. I want to thank our friends at Madison Computer Works and the fine folks at S&R Remodeling. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us today. John, the natives are restless. Here we go.
A rough start for the new education secretary, Betsy DeVos. Protesters physically blocking her way as she tries to enter a D.C. public school. A security agent escorting her back to her car.
Shame! Shame! Shame!
DeVos is one of President Trump's most controversial cabinet picks, confirmed by the Senate only after the vice president cast a historic tie-breaking vote. She's been criticized for never attending public school or teaching at one. But she's not the only one feeling heat. Frustration with Washington spilling out in town halls across the country. Republican Congress members facing the backlash. In Utah, Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz met with boos. Chaffetz led some of those investigations into Hillary Clinton, posting this picture shaking hands with her on Inauguration Day, with the caption, "So pleased she is not the president," now confronting 1,000 fed-up voters angry with the new administration.
Given the choice that was before us, by far Donald Trump was the better choice.
Similar scenes playing out from Tennessee to Illinois and Georgia. In California, Congressman Tom McClintock coming out, but with police protection. The common thread, concerns about Obamacare and what might replace it.
And you want to take away this coverage and have nothing to replace it with. How can I trust you to do anything that's in our interest at all?
We asked the House Speaker.
Are you concerned that you need to not just present a plan, but sell it to the American people quickly?
We cherish the First Amendment. And people who are concerned and anxious, we want them to know that we want to listen to their concerns. We're going to be going out and talking about what our plan is.
I haven't seen on the docket a Paul Ryan listening session. As a matter of fact, in the past, he's gone as far as to use taxpayer money to advertise his listening sessions on right-wing radio. Have you seen a Paul Ryan listening session, John?
Sure, it's coming really soon.
I'm sure. Just like he debated his opponents in his re-election this last time.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's like, I love that. We cherish the First Amendment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably when somebody says that to you.
They don't.
You better trust but verify. He says that as a member of Congress who voted for the Patriot Act and for, you know, every brutal extension of it. He cherishes the First Amendment sort of like a city refuse worker cherishes garbage. You know, I mean, his respect for it is, you know, he's conscious of it. He's aware of it. But I don't think that he's shown respect for it. But with that said, you know, if Paul Ryan wants to hold a listening session, I would invite him to organize it and find the most conservative community in his district. Go just pick wherever he wants. I'm not going to say for sure. I know the district well. I grew up in it. I would say
Burlington?
No, Burlington's, you know, it's Burlington, I don't think I would be surprised if he had the guts to go there. I'm saying, you know, let's find some place probably in Walworth County.
Lake Geneva?
No, that wouldn't work. I think you got to go, you probably go in someplace in some of the more rural regions of Walworth County, I would imagine. And he can pick wherever he wants. He can have it in a barn if he wants on some farm, you know.
Fontana.
Fontana, yeah, Bennett, I got to tell you, I know Fontana pretty well. I think it might be a little liberal for him. I think there's a couple townships out there that might, you know, might be possible.
Kansasville.
Kansasville, yeah, it's interesting.
Wheatland. See, I know
Wheatland,
all these towns.
Maybe.
Wheatland.
Yeah, I do too. Look, I used to go, when I went to church, I went from Union Grove to Burlington, and we went through Kansasville.
Sure.
So here's what I'm saying, though. It's up to him. His choice. Pick the most conservative town in the district. the most, find the town that voted strongest for Donald Trump and for Paul Ryan. Have your listening session there. Go right ahead. What I will tell you is he will encounter passionate, sincere, respectful, yet intense opposition to the agenda that he personally is advancing. And this is an important thing to understand. You cannot separate Paul Ryan from Donald Trump. They are one and the same. If Donald Trump does something wrong, Paul Ryan finds a way to defend or facilitate it. That's an important thing to understand. That's why people are turning out for these sessions. And, you know, there's an interesting subtlety in these sessions. As you know, I'm somebody who has defended and championed those Republicans who are willing to stand on principle. And I will tell you that if you take a look at Justin Amash's town meeting out in Michigan, it actually went very, very well. Justin Amash heard people that were very, very critical of Donald Trump. And sometimes he disagreed with them, sometimes he agreed with them, but it was an honest, sincere, and healthy discussion, and I think a lot of people respected it. But that's because Justin Amash is not a robot. Justin Amash is somebody who, you know, listens, takes things in, responds. And the members of Congress who are having trouble at these sessions are robotic. They don't respond. They don't have a give and take. What they hear what the crowd is saying, and then they spin out some talking point, which translates as, you're wrong and I don't care what you say. And that's why you've seen some of these sessions turn pretty intense. And unless I'm misreading Paul Ryan, he doesn't really have a defense for what he's done. He has, from the fall of 2015, been the number one facilitator of Donald Trump. No one has done more to facilitate the rise of Donald Trump than Paul Ryan.
It's interesting, though. Donald Trump has sort of ended any chance Paul Ryan's ever got at becoming president of the United States. His days are over.
Well, technically, that's not true, Sly.
Well, technically,
I want to clarify here.
Technically, I could enter the Boston Marathon, but that's not going to happen.
It would be interesting. Well, I think you should, but here's where I think you're wrong, and I think you're going to agree with me. When you're looking at an administration of Donald Trump and Mike Pence, and the accountability moment that both of these jokers are headed toward, being Speaker of the House is, you know, a relatively solid position to be in it if you're looking to be President of the United States. Because I'm going to tell you very clearly.
You think there could be a dual impeachment? By the way, they're taking betting lines on it all over the world now.
Do you know that when I wrote the history of impeachment back in about 10 years ago, and my publisher, the pins that they printed, said impeach Cheney first. And there, one of the things to understand about impeachment is it is a political tool, not a legal tool. And it is used to protect the Republic, to protect the Constitution. It's not, you know, some sort of way of prosecuting. People always make that mistake. And if folks were genuinely interested in protecting the Republic, right, in protecting, defending the Constitution, defending the rule of law, I think you'd have to have some caution about, you know, just getting rid of Donald Trump. Now, I'm not saying that's where we're at. I don't think we're at that moment quite yet. But what I am telling you is that these players, Trump and Pence, and those around them, are behaving in ways, responding to challenges in ways that beg for an accountability moment. And the likelihood is that moment will come. Now, the interesting thing is when and how. And it is possible to be short of impeachment, to have censure and other actions and just basic pushback that assert the power of the legislative branch in our system of separated powers. In that case, you have the potential that Paul Ryan could become a heroic figure. But I'm dubious about whether he's going to rise to that occasion. He has never yet risen to the occasion of heroism. But if he doesn't, then the 2018 election will be a fascinating election, because in my opinion, it will be an election solely about one issue, checking and balancing Donald Trump and the people around him. And for Paul Ryan, the challenge he must face is the prospect of a significant reduction in or elimination of his Republican majority in the House. And I know that's hard because of gerrymandering and everything, but that is the prospect that he faces. So the question is, does he lead and do the right thing before to check and balance this president?
All right, let's...
Any of the many tools.
This is from ABC.
Under fire tonight, the president's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, now accused of misleading the public and even the vice president about his conversations with the Russian ambassador to the United States. The story, first reported by the Washington Post and confirmed by ABC News, on the very day in December that President Obama imposed sanctions on Russia for meddling in the election, Flynn told the Russian ambassador the incoming Trump administration would review those sanctions. That directly contradicts what Vice President Pence said last month.
What I can confirm, having spoken to him about it, is that those conversations that happened to occur around the time that the United States took action to expel diplomats had nothing whatsoever to do with those sanctions.
And not just the VP. Press Secretary Sean Spicer portrayed Flynn's call with the ambassador as about nothing more than setting up a later call between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump.
And the call centered around the logistics of setting up a call with the president of Russia and the president-elect after he was sworn in. That was it. Plain and simple.
Spokesperson for Flynn, who famously dined with Vladimir Putin in Moscow 2 years ago and has been criticized for his close ties to the Russian government, now says the National Security Advisor simply cannot remember whether he discussed sanctions, a switch from his earlier denials. These developments come on a day President Trump emphasized diplomacy, touting a phone call he had yesterday with the president of China.
I had a very, very good conversation, as most of you know, yesterday with the president of China. It was a very, very warm conversation. I think we are on the process of getting along very well.
Throughout the campaign, Trump portrayed China as one of America's biggest economic rivals.
All right. Now, this is Malcolm Nance, who, of course, is the NBC analyst on many of these issues internationally, former CIA operative. Here's what Malcolm Nance said about Michael Flynn.
I mean, what's the old saying? The cover-up is the crime. I cannot possibly imagine how the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency would not know about OFM, Own Force Monitoring, where we monitor the calls of not only our enemies, but American citizens who are in communications with our enemies as a counterintelligence protection measure to ensure that that person is not a spy for a foreign power. Everyone knows this. There's an entire organization.
So you're saying he should have known that when he talked to the ambassador, he was being monitored.
And there's two transcripts here. The New York Times says that there is a transcript that has been seen by U.S. intelligence. That's our side of it. The Russians have their own transcript of what was actually said. And these things can be used not only for blackmail, okay, but it could also be manipulated. His only protection right now is the fact that we know what he said. He should come clean. He should, if he did a quid pro quo, or if he discussed this, by the way, on the day we were kicking out 35 right. Russian spies, and he was assuring them this will be no problem, things could change in the Trump administration. Who does he work for?
There you go. Who does he work for?
Well, and I think that commentator made a really good point.
Yeah, there, Malcolm Nance.
Which is that Flynn was talking on a key day as regards how President Trump would respond to things and how Putin would respond to things. And remember how surprised people were that after the United States threw out a bunch of diplomats and exposed Russian facilities in the U.S. so that we were actually looking at the pictures of facilities owned by the Russians. Putin's reaction was, oh, it's going to be fine. We don't mind. You know, we're not bothered by this because it's all going to be cool in a few days. Where did Putin get that absolute assurance? What made him so confident? Right? That's the question that has to be asked. We don't know the answer, and I think we should be always careful. You know, we don't have to make extreme claims. We don't have to say, oh, this was done by Flynn, this wasn't done by Flynn. But we should look at the timeline. This is a very, very serious issue, right? Because if President Obama took an action on behalf of the United States in consultation with our national security officials and observers, if he did that for the purpose of securing or advancing the status of the U.S. as regards its relation with Russia, and that was undermined by someone who told the Russians they needn't worry about, they needn't take seriously or respond to an action by the U.S. government, not by President Obama, but by the U.S. government, we're in a very serious issue here. I mean, this is big deal stuff. I mean, big kid stuff.
Well,
right?
there's a sideline.
Let me finish the one final thing, though. If Donald Trump was aware of that, if he was aware that Flynn was making it, see, I don't care about Flynn very much. I care a lot about who was talking to Flynn before Flynn made phone calls. And if Donald Trump was aware of that, we've got evidence here of wrongdoing that, I mean, you tell me what would be bigger than this.
Well, I don't make the rules anymore and what happens in Washington. I never did, but this is predicting this is very difficult. It is interesting the CIA at the end of last week froze out one of Flynn's picks for somebody that would have gotten top clearance.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some real interesting things going on. You're at Sly'sOffice.com. We're talking to John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. There are a lot of building contractors in the Madison area. You've got a lot of choices, and there are a lot of people that are going to sell you a good line. They put all their efforts in sales. They've got some fancy fast talkers that can give you just about anything you want as far as a promise. But if you want somebody to deliver, to give you an accurate estimate and get the job done at a reasonable price in a reasonable amount of time, you need to go see my friend Scott from S&R Remodeling. S&R Remodeling has been around about 30 years, A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they're so good at taking care of their customers and making sure the projects stay on time, in line, in the way that you deserve. You work hard for your money, and Scott knows that. He's going to give you his personal cell phone number, and he's going to follow along. They don't use bad materials. They don't take shortcuts. So if you want the job done right, that's absolutely the route to go. By the way, you can start out with something small. I'm serious when I say if you need a new screen door put on, although that might have to wait a little while here with the weather, by all means, call S&R Remodeling. S&R Remodeling, 30 years of service to Dane County, A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and really great guys are going to take good care of you. And this is a good time of year to get a good deal. He likes to keep his guys out in the field busy all year long. Whatever it is on your house, they can do it. S&R Remodeling. And we're back with John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. I want to talk a little bit. Well, first of all, this Kellyanne Conway thing is absolutely absurd. Just absolutely ridiculous. And we talked about it on a previous podcast, what she did. She's still going on Fox and blah, 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 blah. Here we go.
Of the United States this afternoon, and that he supports me 100%.
So you spoke about that matter, and he is not, doesn't have any intention to suspend you?
We spoke about a range of matters, and he supports me 100%. In fact, it was a very heartening moment. All I can say to America's women is, at some point in your life, you ought to have a boss who treated me the way that the President of the United States treated me today.
Do you have a hanky there?
It's touching, because, you know, and kind of shocking, really, when you think about it. Because, I mean, who would have ever thought that if you went on national television and defended Donald Trump, and then promoted his daughter's line of products, or at least her former line of products, that Donald Trump would think that was a good thing. I mean, really, that's a, it's like, I don't know where Kellyanne Conway's, you know, kind of like moral compass set. But if I could just offer this.
She lost it in the eighth grade.
I don't know. But if I could tell you what a really good boss would be, here's what a really good boss would be. If you went on national television and you said, I'm not going to defend what the president did. It was clearly wrong. He shouldn't send tweets like that. And I don't think he will again. I also do believe that people have a right to express their concern one way or the other, and businesses have a right to make the decisions that they make. That is simply reality, and the government of the United States is not going to get in the middle of questions about boycotts and products and things like that. And if she had said that, and then she got called into the president's office, and the president said, you know, you really didn't do us any favors today, but you were right. And as painful as it is, I respect what you said, and I'm going to stick with, you know, I listen, and I hear, and I've heard what you said, and I'm going to back you up on this. Now, that would be a good boss. But a boss that says, yeah, it's great that you helped, you know, me advance this agenda and push this line. No, that's not a good boss. What, I don't know. Where's the measure? How is that? How is that a measure of somebody who's backing you up in a difficult position?
So Donald Trump spending a lot of time in Florida already. You may remember Fox spent a lot of time talking about the President Obama golfing every time he went golfing. Yep. They don't seem to be as focused on this president golfing, but that's okay. I think every president should be able to golf and do whatever they want.
I actually think when presidents are golfing, they're usually less harmful.
Probably so. All right, so as you know, North Korea tested a ballistic missile. It landed somewhere between Japan and South Korea, and this was all Donald Trump had to say about it when he was standing next to the Prime Minister of Japan.
I just want everybody to understand and fully know that the United States of America stands behind Japan, its great ally, 100%. Thank you.
Does that mean that he doesn't stand behind South Korea?
It's interesting because, of course, as you know, Japan and South Korea don't always get along so well. There's a lot of history there. And so all I would suggest is you might have thrown South Korea in if you wanted to be diplomatic. However, you know,
you might want to throw the Jews in next time you're talking about the Holocaust.
Yeah, did you see, by the way, I mean, as long as you've deviated radically off the subject matter, did you see there was a congressional resolution put forward by some Democrats that said, you know, basically the Holocaust is real and it was really a horrible circumstance for people who follow the Jewish faith, or frankly, for people who have Jewish identity, you know, and that it got voted down.
Oh,
take a look. It was in the Wisconsin State Journal. They had I try to follow everything. I had not seen this, and the Wisconsin State Journal today had they list kind of the major votes in D.C. and they listed this one, and I was quite fascinated by it, and quite fascinated that all of our Republican representatives, except Paul Ryan, who wasn't voting, voted to shut it down.
Wow.
I am not at all, I want to be clear here, I'm not suggesting that they're deniers or things like that, but I am suggesting that this is what's happening to the Republican Party. They're willing to say and do things that they know is absurd, that they know to be wrong, whether it's shutting down Elizabeth Warren when she's reading a Coretta Scott King letter, or making a clear statement about historical fact, or even climate or something like that. They won't do it because Donald Trump doesn't want them to do it. This is not a conservative political party anymore. This is not a party of Lincoln or anything like that. He is becoming the party of Trump, and people should be conscious of what he is doing.
Well, Trump and O'Bannon. All right. well, so much focus is put on Donald Trump and Washington, D.C. The New York Times has a piece State GOP leaders move swiftly as party bickers in Congress. Republicans in Kentucky seized total control of state government last year. Damon Thayer, the majority leader in the state Senate, began asking around for advice from counterparts in other capitals where the party already dominated both the House and the Senate and the executive office. How could we handle all this power? The answer? Move quickly. Bust unions. Kentucky Republicans have done just that, passing laws to roll back the powers of labor unions and restrict access to abortion. Now it's happening in Missouri. Missouri, of course, is the place where there was a valiant effort years ago to stop right to work where the public got to vote, and they did. They stopped the right to work law. Well, Republicans now have total control in Missouri. Right to work has happened. And here's what's more shocking. And, of course, you know, Missouri's a border state, and so is Kentucky. But here's what's more shocking. New Hampshire is now looking at doing right to work. You know, while we focus all this attention on Trump, the labor movement is being destroyed state by state by state.
Right. And this is a multi, I mean, obviously, this is a long-term strategy that, you know, it's really had as its poster boy and continues to have as its poster boy, Scott Walker. And it is to destroy the unions in the states. And really to harm workers, to cut wages. I wrote about this today in a piece. You know, there's so much happening in the states, it's hard to keep up with it. It's hard to keep up with the D.C. stuff. But you're right about these right-to-work moves. And what's interesting is that you're especially right to point out that back in the 70s, they had a statewide referendum. I think it was in the 70s. I hope I'm right. Statewide referendum in the state of Missouri on it, and right-to-work lost. Way back in the 50s, they had referendums all over on right-to-work. The Republicans thought that this right to work for less, you know, attack on unions was going to be a big thing, you know, and so they were really pushing it in the 50s. And it's credited in many political science texts with having shifted the dynamic in Congress because so many people came out to vote against right to work and thus went down ballot, voted for Democrats for Senate and the House. And what's interesting now is the Republicans that are in charge of these states know that they shouldn't put it to the people. Right? Don't let the people vote on this. Because if they do let the people vote on this, even with all the money, even with all the largesse that the Koch brothers and others bring to these debates, when it gets on the ballot, you end up with a result like you saw in Ohio when they put the assault on public employees on the ballot, and it lost 61-39. People overwhelmingly voted for labor rights. And so they're moving fast in the legislatures without sufficient consideration, without opening it up to the people. And they don't stop. This is the important thing that people, if I could give a message to people in New Hampshire and Missouri and other places, understand what happens in places like Wisconsin. They did the assault on public employees. They said, oh, we're not going to do right to work. Then they did right to work. They said, oh, we're not going to do anymore. We're done. We're done with this. Then they came for prevailing wage for local governments. I said, well, we're done with that. We've done that in the governor's budget now. They go after prevailing wage for state projects. That's a effort to cut wages. That is going after the pay and benefits that workers are guaranteed and the protections that they have. And why they're going after project labor agreements, which are ways that communities and, you know, public entities can negotiate to make sure that projects are done with decent pay, decent benefits, and safety protections, right? You know, to kind of set some basic standards for doing public projects. I mean, they never stop. They not stop.
I have to mention, as long as we're talking about this in Missouri, you know, I just hats off to the great work he's passed on now that Jerry Tucker did in fighting against right to work in Missouri.
Yeah, Jerry Tucker. But, you know, I want to tell you, is I grew up learning about this stuff, learning about the heroic efforts. And, you know, H.L. Mitchell, the great rural organizer, loved that Missouri fight from back in the, again, I think it was in the late 70s, where the point that he made was that when they put it on the ballot in Missouri, it wasn't just the urban areas that voted against right to work. The most rural counties also voted against it. And the point he was making is there are urban-rural coalitions that can be built. There are multiracial, multi-ethnic coalitions that can be built around the cause of fair wages, fair days pay for a fair day's work. And the Republicans are frankly terrified to this day of those coalitions. That's why they don't put these issues on the ballot.
And all this is an existential threat to our economy ever recovering for the parts of the country that where we have this Swiss cheese sort of map of where people are doing well in this country. And it's just, it's a horrible, horrible tragedy. And I don't think I'm overstating it.
I don't think you are either. And I also think that we must be conscious of the multi-tiered level at which this is going on. There are assaults at the local, state, and national level. And, you know, when we speak of resistance, which is a beautiful word, a great word, when we speak of resistance, the thing is that it should be expansive. And, I mean, the first responsibility of resistance is to protect those who are directly targeted for assault. Refugees, immigrants, women, people who may lose protections or who may be threatened in all sorts of different settings. But we can't stop there. We begin with the solidarity, but we move to, you know, protection of the structure. And it is very, very important to understand that labor rights, protections for workers, prevailing wage laws, project labor agreements, state-based labor laws, federal labor laws that allow you to organize a union and to bargain collectively, that is the structure that allows us to have a fair and functional economy. And so we need to pull this all together. When we resist what Trump is doing, we must also resist what Scott Walker is doing.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.